Hi, my name is Tash and I'm an alcoholic.
And my name is Caitlin and I am not an alcoholic. And this is an exploratory podcast looking at alcoholism, addiction and mental health within the arts and all of the things that make us question,
why am I like this?
Some notices.
We do. We have some apologies and some notices.
Yeah. First off, we've been saying the email wrong.
Oops.
If you listen to the Sober Sunday, you'd already know this. If you're smart and have noticed that we have not responded, you'd know that as well.
I think it's mostly me. I kept telling people that our email was what our Instagram is.
Yeah.
So it is not why am I like this pod at gmail.com. It is not that at all.
No, it is just whypod at gmail.com. That's justwhypod at gmail.com. If you own the why am I like this pod at gmail.com, please send us our mail.
Maybe we should email that email and say, hello, if this is in use, can you please email us anything?
I did think about that.
Anyway, that. So that's item number one. Yeah. Sorry about it.
Item number two, we're now on Twitter.
Woo, tweet, tweet.
I caved. I hate Twitter.
Look, I only have ever tweeted in the past to complain at companies. I'm that guy. or to praise companies, to be fair.
I retweet about Star Wars.
You would.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's all I do. Yeah.
But what our why am I like this Twitter, we can't even tell you what it's going to be like because we don't know.
Yeah.
But you can follow that if you're a Twitter person. Yes. And you can tweet at us.
At why am I like this pod?
Which makes sense because that's what all of our other fucking handles are.
It's not my fault. It's the bloody that email.
It's all right.
We have a Spotify playlist now.
Hell yeah, we do. And I mean, we're already sort of fighting about it.
It's been an hour.
It's been up for an hour. We'll have the link in the show notes. Yes. Otherwise, you can search it. It's called Why Do I Like This?
Because we're smart.
With the classic capitals hashtag branding. It's just going to be songs that we really like. Sure. Caitlin wants a fucking theme.
I think it should be Guilty Pleasures.
But all of the songs I listen to are Guilty Pleasures.
Really?
Well, to me. Like, but nobody else likes any of my music.
The point of a Guilty Pleasure is like, oh, I shouldn't, but like, low-key. Really? Actually, now that I say it out loud, Guilty Pleasure is a bit of an issue as a concept anyway, but whatever.
Sure. So I think this is more like the theme of this podcast is music that Tash and Caitlin like. We have wildly different music tastes as well. So I feel like if you just want to listen to a variety of tunes that you might not have heard before, then you can follow our playlist.
Yeah. Or just listen to the podcast again to hear our voices.
Yeah.
It'd be fun as well. Good for me. And as we mentioned at the end of our last episode, we're on Patreon.
Wee, Patreon.
So we can pay Ryan.
And maybe even ourselves.
We have a Patreon.
We do.
The beautiful Remy.
Who we've actually talked about on this podcast.
Yes.
Before.
We didn't pay them.
No. No, and they didn't pay us either to mention them.
No.
Not Spawn.
Yeah.
The wonderful and beautiful Remy Gordon.
Oh. Who's throwing us a little money every now and then. You can do the same. You can have us talk about you like this.
We could talk about you with love.
For a certain price point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And otherwise you'll have access to all of our bonus content, which we will start uploading.
Yeah.
As well as lots of cool things like mystery art from me, which, I mean, who doesn't want that? What else? What other fun things?
You can have
we're gonna
tour.
Have merch at some point. Oh also yeah, the mad tour.
The tour.
10 grand tour.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's Patreon. That's gonna be great. Do it. It's cool. It's fun and we love you for it.
Yeah. Spawn over, you can stop hitting 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is probably what I would have done.
Fair enough.
We're gonna talk about some stuff.
Stuff today.
Some stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah. Tash, you had some thoughts about a certain thing.
Oh, my God. I've had so many fucking thoughts this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, so obviously this started off as a show about alcoholism.
Mm.
And it still is a show about alcoholism, and we've kind of dipped into other topics throughout that. So we're going to bring it back to the main point.
Yes.
And
alcoholism heavy episode.
Yeah. So be warned.
Mm.
I think that one of the things a lot of people think about with alcoholism, this is something we were talking about, is the recovery journey.
Mm.
With some pretty bells and whistles around that.
Yeah. Noise. Like rehab.
Yeah.
Like loads of people ask me if I've gone to rehab, which I find interesting and invasive, but sure.
Yeah. So I think it'd be interesting if we can unpack the idea of recovery a bit more, what we know, what we don't know, what you've experienced, what I've experienced online and through the media, because that's what my brain is. And looking at certain institutes and organizations who tend to be the main things that crop up when you're talking about recovering from an alcoholic addiction.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
That's great.
Let's dive in.
Cool. So what was the thing that you first went to when you were like, recovery?
Well, I wanted to go to rehab.
Okay.
And so that's actually the first thing I remember my friend, my good friend Elle, was probably one of the first people that I ever mentioned it to. And we were kind of driving and I kind of said, I have been thinking about rehab. And just sort of testing the waters. And I think there's that part of you that kind of wants your friends to be like, what? Why?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, all right. And I was like, oh.
It's real.
It's real. And everyone else sees it too.
Yeah.
And I did. I looked into quite a lot of different rehab facilities because I felt like there's no way I can do this on my own.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I looked into a few different facilities. And to be honest, they all, not all of them, of course, but they're kind of bougie, you know, like you need quite a lot of money to be able to go to, you know, a private professional rehab facility.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you have to travel either like interstate or out country, even overseas for some of the really sort of prestigious, I guess, rehabs. And I'm not quite sure what, how they're scaled like that.
Mm.
But my understanding is that rehab is very all-encompassing. It's from the moment you wake up, from the moment you go to bed, it's about recovery, it's about strategy planning, it's about sharing and being accountable and having those community moments as well.
Yeah.
And again, this is just from what I've researched and what I looked into. I'm sure there's a huge like variety of different types of rehab and recovery facilities. For me, it just seemed maybe a little bit too dramatic.
Okay.
You know? And I kind of thought, oh, I don't want to go in there and be, I don't know why I thought this, but I didn't want to go in there and be like the best of a bad bunch, you know?
No.
Like I didn't want to rock up to rehab and be surrounded by people who have had narcotics issues or have been alcoholics for maybe 50, 60 years or have maybe found themselves in worse situations than me, which is something I found in AA as well.
Yeah. Wait, so you had like alcoholics imposter syndrome?
God, that is a thing. Yes.
Like my issue isn't as bad as this.
Yeah.
Therefore, I don't need to do this.
I love this podcast. It's just that. So RTRs for me are real-time revelations.
Okay.
And I've just had one. Like that is wild. That is exactly how I felt. Yeah. Like I wasn't sick enough or I hadn't like been through enough or I wasn't worthy of recovery.
Yeah.
And I think that's all packaged up with my self-hatred and like, I don't deserve to get better. I don't deserve to be better.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck it up anyway. Why even try? I think that was all sort of packaged in together. And then it was really easy to be like, well, I can't afford rehab, so fuck it. Yeah. And I think it's like quite a like celebrity kind of thing. Cause I think when you think of rehab, you think of celebrity. Well, I do. I think of celebrities.
Yeah.
You know, the rich and famous laying in a spa somewhere.
Yeah.
Detoxing.
Yeah.
When obviously I have no idea, but I would imagine that most rehab facilities are nothing like that.
Yeah.
And then obviously Alcoholics Anonymous, which I think everyone is familiar with.
Yes.
And hi, my name's Tash and I'm an alcoholic.
Which, so when I was like writing the show, like notes prep for this, I had this bit of like the classic, hi, I'm blah, and I'm an alcoholic. And then the response, hi, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's also how we start the show.
It is how we start the show.
Was that intentional and I've just missed it?
No, it wasn't. It was intentional. Okay. I did that. Yeah, on purpose. But they do a cool, I think I mentioned this in the first episode as well. they sing a happy birthday song to you when you read, like, every sober year you have.
Aww.
Which is really cute.
I can sing you a
sober
happy birthday song.
It's really nice. And at the end, they're like, happy birthday, and here's to, like, many more or whatever.
Aww.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Yeah, I was there for a few people's birthdays.
Yeah.
When I was in AA. And obviously, like, AA is synonymous with the 12-step program.
Yeah.
What do you know about the steps?
I don't know a lot.
Yeah.
Honestly, because, like, it's not something I've looked into.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
What about from, like, pop culture?
And that's the thing. So all of the information I know about Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps, apart from the stuff that you've given me, is purely based off the media.
Yeah.
And usually American media and also, like, British, because the two examples I can think of straight away in terms of, like, current pop culture was Rocket Man, because Elton John is in, like, rehab, and Killing Eve, because there's a whole bit where Oksana goes and is someone in, like, drug rehab, and it's that image of sitting in a circle and being like, hi, my name is blah, let's talk about this. House is another one that comes to mind.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. From my experience, AA is a lot less of a circle because there are so many people there.
Mm.
Like, it is not a 5-6 person, we have issues. It's, in my experiences, it's been more like 30, 50, 70 people in a room. Like, some standing, some sitting. Like,
yeah, you know. I can picture, I'm trying to, like, my brain is trying to recall media references where I've seen visuals of it. But, like it looks like almost like a church service.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, church, as you say that, and religion is very heavily woven into the 12-step program, the original 12-step program.
Yeah.
So I think the original Alcoholics Anonymous book and the 12 steps and the big book, they're all sort of called the same thing. It was started in 1935, but the book came out in 1939.
Okay.
And to be honest, not, like, almost nothing has changed. It's the same.
That's like a hundred.
Yeah.
Can I do maths? Yeah, that's almost 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, sort of 80 odd. But yeah, like,
it's almost 2020.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that that's why there is a large population of people who identify as an alcoholic who won't do AA for that reason.
Yeah.
Because they don't identify with religion. Some of those people have got, like, personal prejudice against it from their experiences.
Okay.
And some of them are just downright no, nothing religious, no God, no Lord, nothing. There is a chapter in the big book which is about agnostics and not, you know, atheism and how you don't have to believe in a God per se. And some people will tell you that changing that language to your Lord or your higher self or your power can be the way that they sort of get around that.
Yeah.
I know. And I know Annie talked about it as well. That's a big blocker for her with AA, is that the religion aspect. But I'm not too bothered by it.
Okay.
It does definitely make me feel uncomfortable in certain points. And it's not so much the meetings and being there and the 12 steps being inclusive of a religious figure. It's other people within the program
telling me
for fact that God will solve my problems if I do X, Y, Z.
Okay.
And for me, as I think someone who is so passionate about being accountable and being strong and independent, I'm like, no, I'm working so hard for myself, on myself, because of myself. Like, it's very complicated because it's also like some people in AA will say, you did this to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you made yourself an alcoholic. But obviously, if this is God's plan, didn't he do this to me?
Okay.
You know, like, it's a bit of a muddy area because if this is a test from God, then why would he help me get through it?
Yeah.
Because it's meant to be my challenge to overcome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's lots of, I think, grey areas. And I would really, really, really love to hear from anyone that has had positive experiences with AA.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially younger people. I know that there's a lot of adults that, you know, swear by it. But it's a different time. Like.
Yes. Well, and it's also a thing of not everyone identifies as religious anymore.
Yeah.
Like, at least not in the Christian sense of it.
because there's more people who will say that they are agnostic or don't prescribe. Is that the word I want to use?
Subscribe?
Yeah, to a religion.
Mm,
and you can see this through the census and stuff like that. Like it's 44%. And then the rest is like, that's just in Adelaide.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great fact.
Yeah.
So 44% atheism.
No. So they had no religion.
Okay, sure.
Yep. And then 40.5% of the population nominated a religion.
Interesting.
So not necessarily like
any sort of religion.
Yeah. Which is very interesting because a lot of people, like if you compared the stats of religion, particularly Christian and Catholic, all that umbrella, whatever, now to what it was like 20 years ago, not even 20 years ago, like 10 years ago, the change is drastically less people are more religious.
Why do you think that is?
I
mean, yeah, big question.
Apart from the obvious, in terms of you look at what's been happening, particularly in the Catholic Church in the last 5 years, I think it's actually, I would say that's probably why, like one of the big tipping points for it. And then also,
because I think, I guess that generation that grew up in that environment is now old enough. Do you think that's got something to do with it?
What generation?
Like the generation that was, it's such a touchy topic, like a younger generation who was in, maybe not forced into religion.
That sense. No, yeah. I would say that if you, like, this is my actual theory. Apart from news scandals, all that kind of stuff aside, like pushing that aside, you have a generation with your baby boomers and the generation older who are very heavily Catholic, predominantly white, and were in or are in countries that were set up by Christians, and the separation between church and state was very difficult. Generation after that, which is our parents, were a bit like leaning away from it because you had the introduction of pop media, pop culture, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, see, my parents are boomers.
Yeah, yeah. Mine aren't. So then you have the generation after that, which you're like,
Is that us? Pretty much us.
Yeah. And that brings in the internet and all this kind of stuff, and we start idolizing other things, and that can tie into theories around pop cultures and celebrities being the new messiah.
Yeah.
And then you have
Illuminati.
Yeah. Well, then you have another generation, which is the, what are they?
Is that your generation?
No, I'm a millennial. I'm on the, it's 96 to whatever. Yeah. 97 next is the next generation. Yeah. So I'm on the cusp. And there's people will argue me about that. I'm like, nah, I'm on the cusp. Go away. I'm a millennial.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing of you are a millennial if you remember a time before technology and the internet.
Yes.
I remember that time.
Yeah.
It's the ages after that don't. And that is an age that has purely grown up on the internet.
God, how horrific.
Yeah, it's post all this other kind of stuff. You also define generations by, like, things. So the new generation is a time of Obama and Trump.
Yep.
Our generation is the one that, like, after the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, culture definers. And you can track religion and kind of predominantly Western countries and media and all that kind of stuff. You can track our relationship with religion through that and what happens in terms of popes.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And presidents and who's doing X, Y, Z, and you look at speeches and in God's names and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you can also look at it in terms of world massive events. So global financial crisis.
Yeah.
If God does X, Y, Z, then why would he do this?
Yeah.
Why would they do this rather? Yeah. If there is a God, there are they.
God is a woman.
Also that. And you could look at it like that. So our generation and the generation after that are less likely to prescribe, I'm going to stick with that word, to religion. And you can see that through the census and the stats.
Yeah.
And I am saying this as a white person who grew up in an Irish Catholic Christian, granted a bit slack, family.
Yeah.
And I would be very interested to see if the same is for other religions that aren't Christian.
Yeah.
I would say that it's a similar trend. Yeah.
Yeah. I think because there's a lot of, like, even in AA, like, AA is, in my experience, being quite a lot of older people.
Yeah.
And, yeah, definitely baby boomers and, like, you know, parent people that are my grandparents' age.
Yeah.
I was saying this to you the other day, and I know I said it on the last episode about getting rinsed on the internet in the comments. And so I did the thing again. I went on the internet again.
Tash, and, what did we say?
Because I needed support. Like, I had a really bad week. And I had, like, I had my family dog put down, which was really sad. And she'd been with us for 13 years. And in that process, I realized that this is actually the first time that I've experienced grief sober. I've been sad, yeah, and I've definitely been like down and whatever, but this was like pure broken-hearted grief that I just, it overcome me. Like I even now I don't know how to talk about it, and I just sort of have to drop off the planet when I'm in those situations, and there's no amount of crafting or distraction that can help. I literally become catatonic, and I just kind of cry and stare, and my eyes leak all the time. Like no matter what I'm doing, I'm fucking tearing and crying, and and that's when I have to actually make physical time blocked out for grieving, mm-hmm, like to cry, because if I don't, I will carry that sadness for weeks and weeks and weeks while I try and get on with my life.
Yeah.
So I was in a really dark place, and it was really insane. Like I was driving back from Pilates or something, and I burst into tears and sobbing, 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 really heavy, ugly crying in the car. And my brain was just going, get a drink, I want a drink, I need a drink, I want a pint of wine, I want a pint of wine, I want a pint of wine. Yeah. And I was almost physically having those movements of wanting to like bring my hand up to my mouth, and the visuals and the need to scull a pint of wine, and like obviously not for the taste or because of the alcohol or whatever, but just so that I can not feel so full on, right? Like I just needed to numb it a bit.
Yeah.
And that was really awful. And that there was a couple of days there that I was doing a lot of no one's home, I could drink that, I don't have to tell anyone, I could do this, I don't have to tell anyone. And it's probably like one of a handful of times in the last year that I've actually genuinely considered breaking it and not having a quiet drink at the pub over lunch, which I did in the UK, which is quote unquote fine for me. This is like, oh, I want a drink. Like, yeah. I want to go away. Like, maybe if I go to a pub down south, maybe no one will know me. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do that. Could I walk to the bottle shop? And so anyway, I went online and I went on Alcoholics Anonymous Facebook group, which I joined myself to recently. And I'd been really disappointed because I kept seeing this like really aggressive behavior, which was really similar to what I experienced the other week. And a lot of people sort of making facts and statements about their experience as if it was applicable to everyone.
Yeah.
I made a post and I said, I'm actually really disgusted with a lot of the behavior that I see on this page as someone somewhat new to sobriety. I'm really struggling and I'm looking for connection, and these are the things that I need. This is what I'm looking for. Can you help me? I asked for what I needed. And again, like I got rinsed to the point where the moderators had to turn off the comments.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then people started screenshotting what I'd written, reposting that, and saying, why did they turn the comments off? And then continuing and like continuing to tag me in it. And I was like, this is the most triggering thing that's ever happened. I'm being online bullied by other alcoholics right now.
Yeah.
And like, of course, there were quite a few. And I'm going to say it's 100% women. Not a single non-female identifying person reached out to me.
Yeah.
It was only women of my own sort of age who private messaged me and said, hi, here are some great links. Here's this, here's that, don't listen to this, and here's some words of support and encouragement. And that was really lovely.
Yeah.
But a lot of people on there were saying, you know, you need tough love, no one's going to coddle you, you did this to yourself, like all very aggressive. And the idea that I need tough love really upset me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you don't know how tough I have been on myself for the last 27 years. Like I don't need tough love. I need to be supported for the first time. I need love, you know. And so that was quite upsetting. And I guess it's just this older generation of alcoholics have got this, you know, and a lot of people did comment saying, you know, years of sobriety has made them hard and cold and mean, and they've turned their back against the world because of X, Y, Z or their experiences, which I totally relate to and I understand, but that is not your place to then drag other people down with you. If you want to be a bitter old person, like that's on you. Don't then come for me because I'm trying to do things a different way to you.
Yeah.
And on that group as well, everyone's very much like, if you don't go to meetings, if you don't go to AA, and if you don't have a sponsor, then what are you doing? There's no point, and you're not a real alcoholic and you're not taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And they call it what's called a dry drunk, when you're like not drinking, but you're not doing anything to support yourself or to change your behavior. You've just stopped cold turkey, like, but you're not actually addressing any of the issues. You know, you're a dry drunk. You're still fucked.
And
I was definitely that for, you know, months. But yeah, in my research as to what I could do apart from AA, I came across this thing called Smart Recovery.
Okay.
And it's self-managed show notes. but it's basically the idea that it's a more, they use nurses and, you know, psychologists and therapists, and it's uses proven science and, you know, proven psychology to help you overcome this, not by saying, well, I'm going to write a list of all the people who have wronged me,
yeah,
which is a huge part of the 12 steps. And maybe we can go through what they actually are in a minute.
Yeah.
But the smart recovery ones, it's really basic. It's only about four sort of principles rather than rules. And it's definitely something that I identify with a little bit more. I like to think of it as like a realist kind of approach.
They sound like, and this is going off brief immediate thoughts. Every time I hear smart, I think of SMART goals.
What's SMART goals?
Oh my gosh. SMART goals are like, oh, fuck, what are they? Like something measurable, attainable, realistic. Like they're ways to track goals.
Yeah, it's very much like that. Is that not a good thing?
No, it's a good thing. It's just my personal SMART goals. As someone who like did the NGO, worked for small organizations, et cetera, yeah. Run, SMART goals are like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
But it is something that is used a bit in like therapy.
Yeah.
But a recovery better programs. Word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or in terms of mental health and stuff.
SMART recovery as well is not just about AA, like or about alcohol, sorry. SMART goals. Look what you SMART goals. SMART recovery can be for your addiction to food, to the internet, to porn, literally to anything. It's just about a whole lifestyle overhaul. And I think that kind of suits me and my mindset a little bit better.
Yeah.
They still have meetings. It's still anonymous. It's still, you know, community run. So that appeals to me. And I'm hoping that it'll just be a bit more like-minded people.
So SMART itself stands for Self-Management and Recovery Training.
That's it.
Then they have – so their vision is to have it accessible and relevant to all, which I guess would work in sense of not having religion as tied to that, because that can be inaccessible for some people. And they, like, strive to provide accessible evidence-based tools to help people manage addictive behavior, so it's not just alcohol, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then they run off four values, so acceptance, empowerment, integrity, and respect.
Yeah.
And then principles of self-management, mutual aid – choice, evidence-led, innovation, collaboration, and person-centered.
Like those are all things that I talk about on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I think that this is really suited to me.
Yeah.
The four-point SMART recovery process is, number one, building and maintaining the motivation to change. So as opposed to AA, which is we admitted that we are powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. Like they're the same. But this one's got motivation, you know?
Yeah.
Number two is coping with urges to use. Number three is managing thoughts, feelings, and behaviors in an effective way without addictive behaviors. And number four is living a balanced, positive, healthy life.
Yeah.
It's so, to me, it seems really simple and wholesome and achievable.
Yes.
I don't know why 12 steps seems like a lot, but it does.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
For reference and comparison, the 12 steps for Alcohol Anonymous I'm going to go through now. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power, with a capital P, greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character.
See, like, I just feel like there's a lot of somebody else is responsible for your well-being.
Yeah.
You know?
That was a cue for you to read the other six.
Sorry, I know. I just like, So number seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Like, I'm annoyed. Okay, number eight, make a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take a personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge that he will, for us, the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, so you have to have your spiritual awakening, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs, which is like the idea of service,
yeah,
which I talked about.
As a disclaimer.
Yeah.
We are not bagging Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, no, no. Everyone's got a program that works for them.
Yes.
And I'm simply saying it is these religious elements that stop,
yeah,
or that discourage people.
Yes.
They have got an agnostics version,
yeah,
of 12 Steps, which is a bit newer. It's very similar. They have just removed the terms of any religious with self-accountability.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the idea of accepting that you are wrong and then having to, like, give yourself up, I think doesn't really sit well with me because, yeah, I think that if you realize that you've got negative behaviors, you have to work on them. You can't just know, like, you know, this comes back to what I preach every single episode. You can't just know you have a problem and do nothing about it. It's,
yeah,
like being a dry drunk, you know, you gotta do shit, like, go to therapy, go to meet, whatever it is you need to do, you got to do it.
Yes.
Got to do the work.
It's interesting, and this is going back to in terms of religion and another service, and I've just remembered it. So my grandfather, who I never met because he passed before I was born, and I'd like to apologize to my dad if I get any of this information wrong because I tend to do this when I'm recounting my own history. Both my grandfather and my grandmother were pioneers. Which, have you heard of that term before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, Irish Catholic, you pledge to not drink alcohol. And my, yep, grandfather was one. I think my uncle is one at the moment. And a story that was recounted to me by my father the other week is that they were involved in local sports and church and all that kind of stuff. And, like, you'd go get a drink at the pub afterwards. Yeah, so local sports. Get a drink at the pub afterwards, and the men would always turn to my father and be like, can we buy you a drink? And he's like, I'm a pioneer. And they're like, okay, we're going to buy your wife a drink. And she wasn't a pioneer, and then she realized after a point that if she said, I am also a pioneer, people would start offering to buy her drinks because they just know.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And also just another option to be looking at is obviously tied to religion as well, because part of it is taking a pledge when you're younger to not drink until you're the age 18 and then redo that pledge.
Yeah.
But also interesting the fact that it's Ireland, because Ireland is notorious for having a problem with alcohol.
Truly.
And it's something they're trying to combat because it's such a small population.
Yeah, and it's such a stigma for their culture as, like,
definitely,
you know, for them as a country.
Oh, yeah, St. Yeah. Patrick's Day. Case in point.
Yeah.
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 This is just very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, there's lots of different obviously, I think people just refer to them generally as recovery programs.
Yeah.
And it really is just about finding what's right for you.
Mm.
Like, I know some people do a detox, which is different from rehab, and you can do that as an outpatient as well.
Okay.
So let's say I was back in the throes of my – well, this sort of nearly happened to me. So when I was 18 – I talked about this before. When I was 18, I quit drinking for a week on a dare.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you got very, very, very sick.
Yeah, and I got really sick. And then when I went to the doctor, she's like, you're an alcoholic, like, you are detoxing, like, you're, you know. My advice would be to keep drinking. You know, she's like, obviously I can't tell you to keep drinking, but I am telling you that if you're 18, you don't live here.
Yeah.
Like, I would not try and drastically change your lifestyle. Obviously cut back the amount that you drink.
Yes.
But going cold turkey is not an option for you.
Yeah.
Right now. But some people that are in that similar situation at that level and worse can go to a hospital and do detoxing in and out, you know, IVs and fluids and all of those kinds of things as well.
Yeah.
They don't always provide a psychological service, but sometimes.
Okay.
And that's normally the first sort of step before getting you into AA or some sort of recovery program.
Yeah.
You do your detox, you're healthy, you're not ill or hopefully you're not angry or upset and you're in a good mindset and they can sort of send you out and prepare you.
I think it's interesting that the biggest ones that we can think of without having to easily Google it are ones that aren't aimed at people who are younger, they're not easily accessible, they're tied to religion.
Yep.
So it makes me wonder, apart from smart recovery, if there is something out there for people that isn't tied to religion.
I think it's us, dude. Like, I seriously think it's like young voices talking about it.
Okay.
Because something, do you know what? I almost feel like, you know, and I'm not a baby boomer, I'm not from that generation, it's pure speculation, but I feel like part of them, they're not great at accountability.
Yeah.
Baby boomers. So I feel like having a higher power to kind of not blame, but put the pressure on.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, I'm not, you know, quote unquote cured yet or healed yet because I haven't had my spiritual awakening because God doesn't think I'm ready.
Yeah.
And it could be that, or it could be that you're not dealing with the deeper issues or you're not doing X, Y, Z, and maybe it's your fault, which obviously nobody likes to hear.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, love to hear that.
I
find it empowering. It lets me be able to do things about it. But, yeah, so I think maybe that's a reason.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine that baby boomers or many people on the Alcoholics Anonymous group would listen to this and not go off in a rage.
Okay.
You know, from what I've experienced online anyway. Like,
yes.
You know, the very, very light opinions and feelings and my experiences that I
shared online.
Shared and the way they got a reaction, I can't imagine that this would go down well.
Yeah.
There's actually a really fantastic Instagram that I urge you all to follow. I reblog a lot of their things called Sober Girl Society. It's got something like 30,000 followers. That is what I go to.
Yeah.
That's where I go for my resources and for my support. I read those blogs. I see how many, obviously I don't see how many people like it anymore, but I see the following and I see all the comments and I feel part of something.
Yeah.
And I feel part of a community that is trying to change, as opposed to a part of a community who is blaming something else for the thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, definitely. I would be really interested to know if anyone listening is a young person who's dealing with addiction of any shape and form and if they've turned to any sort of resources, whether that be online or a physical space.
Yeah.
You can email us.
Yeah.
At justwhy. @gmail.com.
I mean, the messages that we've gotten on Instagram have been incredible.
Oh, yeah.
From a lot of people who struggle with addiction for all sorts of things.
Yes.
Finding – and, you know, the feedback tends to be, thank you for talking about this.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying something.
Yes.
Thank you for being brutal, you know? Yeah. And I think that that is what our generation is doing, and I think that is the way that we're dealing with things
Talking about it
and just attacking the problem head first, you know?
Audacity.
Oh, how dare we want to better ourselves, flaming youths.
I think as great and as positive and as good talking about this is, there's also a conversation that needs to happen around when to talk about this sort of stuff and how to approach it, because I know that I've found myself in a few conversations that have started from talking about this podcast to that have quickly kind of spiraled into this is what I'm dealing with, which is great. And I hope that every conversation I've had like that have been a thing of cool, supportive, good that we're having this conversation. Please go seek help because I cannot.
Yeah. You are not a therapist.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And it's a sounding board.
Yeah. It's a thing of, When do you have tricky conversations and how do you approach them without throwing it onto someone?
Yeah. I think it's so tough. I feel like you kind of need to preface. I keep using that word. Is that the word I mean?
Yeah.
I think you need to preface whoever it is you're going to talk to with the fact that you're going to talk to them.
Yes.
You know, like saying, hey. Like, for instance, I reached out to a friend of mine. I said, hey, I've been having a horrendous week.
Yeah.
I could really use some of your wisdom in a chat.
Yes.
To let it know that, hey, I want something from you. I don't just want to talk at you. I would like some advice. I'd like some support.
Yeah. And also a thing of, this is the headspace I'm in. Yes. Are you okay if I drag you down into this as well? Yeah.
Which is, you know, as I said recently, I wish my parents would have done that when they told me about that they were putting the dog down. You know, they didn't They called me and told me. They didn't ask me what I was doing and what I was in the middle of and how that news would disrupt my day, which is insane to me because that's like I consider others so frequently. Like I always consider others before myself.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't do that for something so major, I don't understand. And that's obviously brought up a lot of other stuff. But if they'd have said, hey, we need to have a chat with you. What are you up to? Oh, yeah. I'm about to do X, Y, Z. Great. Give us a call back when you're later and you've got tonight when you've got some time.
Yeah.
And that would have been a much better. Are you sitting down? We'd like to have a bit of a chat. And I would sort of know, oh, okay, all right, something's coming, something's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is difficult. And I think it happens to anyone who's open about sharing their experiences with mental health or abuse or really anything.
Mm.
If you make that your cause and you are passionate about it, people are excited for you and they're excited to be involved and they're excited to feel a part of something and they want to talk to you about it, which I totally respect. And it's so wonderful that people feel like they can come to us and talk to about, you know, all those things with us. But at the end of the day, I think sometimes people just need a little reminder that we are both just people as well. We're both just under 30 girls, like trying to live our lives. Yes, we're doing this podcast and yes, it might seem like you know a lot about us, but you also know what we choose to share.
Yeah.
We're doing this knowingly. It's not always appropriate to, you know, share your experiences with us on the spot.
Yeah.
Totally email in. That's what that email is for, so that we can read that in our own time when we can.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's a mixture of us valuing our mental health and also giving top tips for you to value your mental health when you're going into conversations and the mental health of people you're going into conversations with.
Yeah,
because totally. As beautiful as it is that we are at a generation at a time where we can talk about really heavy shit, it is still really heavy shit.
Yeah, it sits with you and you never know what trauma you might have that might be a trigger to someone else.
Yes.
You know, like it's really important that you, in any social situation, you know, if you're at a house party and there's 20 people, that's not an appropriate time to talk about your trauma.
Yeah.
Like I get it that it's awful. And if you have to talk about it right then, pick a close friend and say, hey, I'm really overwhelmed right now. I really need to have a chat about this.
Yes.
But personally, I find casual like anecdotes about trauma to be quite upsetting. Like I get really bothered by them and they stick with me and I worry about it and I take it on and then I worry about that person and then I want to reach out and I want to do this and I want to do that. Like, and I don't have the space for it and I cannot, you know, I can't. I think you can get a bit of a idea, but my brain is a very busy place. I just don't have space.
With a lot on its plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going into the playlist.
Yes. Yeah, good one. But it's, you know, in saying that, we love y'all and we're always up for a chat.
Yes.
Just don't accost us in the street. Or like come into our workplaces or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Mm. So throwback into something you were talking about way early in this conversation about alcoholic imposter syndrome.
Mm.
It's imposter syndrome is so interesting.
It's such a thing.
It's such a big thing.
I feel like our whole generation struggles with it.
Yes, which is insane because how do we all believe we're imposters?
But also we all think we're the best. But also we only think we're the best because we hate ourselves.
That's my life. It's interesting because there's different facets of not believing I am enough of this in order to identify as this. And you see it a lot in the queer community.
Yes.
Like a lot. And it's a conversation I've had with people who like work predominantly in queer spaces and are like, I'm not queer enough for this because I'm a like white gay man and I can't talk about this. As a bisexual, there's all this thing of like, because I can pass as straight a lot of the community doesn't think that my identity is valid, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just very interesting that imposter syndrome can fall into well, I do the same thing with my mental health, and I think I said this last week. Yeah. I said it to someone recently.
Yeah.
If I am not as, like, I don't prescribe to this, therefore I don't need to do this.
And it's in any industry. Like, I know Annie struggles with that in the music industry. I struggle with that with my art. Like, I remember it took me a really long time to accept that just because my art includes glue guns and cardboard and doll's heads doesn't make it any less valid than someone who uses oil paint and a canvas.
Yeah.
Poster syndrome.
It's a thing.
Crazy.
How do you get over that, do you think? Like, how do you...
You value yourself?
Yeah, but how? Like...
You have friends who call you out and be like, what are you doing, yeah. dude? You are XYZ.
Yeah, a supportive friend.
Reality checks.
Self-belief is difficult.
I wonder how different it is in terms of mental health and alcoholism. Because, like, getting someone to hold you to be like, no, your craft is worthy is very different to,
no, you are mentally unhealthy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. What was, did you have an experience like that when you were like, I am not X enough for rehab?
Well, it was, it probably started when I was much younger, like when I was 17, 18. Yeah. And I was saying, confiding, oh, I think I might have a bit of a, and everyone was saying, no, you're fine. You're 18. You're a party girl. You're totally cool. Don't worry about it. You're so much fun. So then that gave me imposter syndrome. Like people telling me that I was imposter gave me imposter syndrome. And I was like, oh God. And then I never really got over them telling me that.
Yeah.
I just used them as excuses. You know, I was like, well, this person 10 years ago said that I was fine, so I'm still fine.
Yeah.
You
know?
But then I snap out of that imposter syndrome every time I'm near a bar. I think about alcohol and I'm like, oh, no, no, no. Because I actually had a – I was wondering a couple of months ago – not even a couple of months ago, a little while ago, I thought, am I an alcoholic or am I just a, like a heavy drinker? You know, like maybe I'm just a like a really heavy drinker.
Yeah.
And then I – thought about it again. I was like, no, 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 because you cannot have one and you, like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah. That's what the quiz is for.
Exactly. And, like, thought back to all the quizzes I'd done that are always fucking, like, 99 or 100%. Like, they're honestly never below, like, 98%.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. Yeah. But also, that's my reality check, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of realities, and this is a horrible segue and I apologize, Pilates. How are you coping?
Oh my God. So is that what we were talking about in the last episode? Me crying about Pilates ending?
I think so. Yeah.
So I mentioned Beck Fletcher, who is my wonderful Pilates instructor and friend and really, really took me step by step through my rehab and recovery, my ankle rehab, and has gone on to pursue her own career in massage and Reiki healing and all that, which is great. I was really grieving the loss of Pilates. That felt like a real moment of grief too. And then I was perusing the internet, looking really half-heartedly, looking for another Pilates studio. And my brain started giving me all the excuses like, oh, like that one's a little bit too far away. Like, oh, that's got too many class. Oh, I don't like the look of their website. And I was trying to kind of weasel my way out of it. And I was like, oh, it's going to be scary. What if it's all like hot bitches in Lycra and I'm there flapping around in my band t-shirt again? Like, I practically go to Pilates in my pajamas. Like, I'm a mess. I've always got like odd socks and my toes hanging out and like my gross glue gun leggings, like whatever. So I was getting nervous about that and started to talk myself out of it. And then I kind of had to take a moment and I was like, no, like, what advice would you give somebody else in this situation?
Yeah.
And I gave out loud to myself alone in my room, I just gave the wall the pep talk that I would give someone. And at the end, I was like, God damn it. So logical. Like, you know, and I was just sort of like, you have to get back on that horse. Like, you've done it once. You can do it again.
Yeah.
If you can walk into a room full of strangers the first time and do, what should it matter what other room it is?
Mm.
You know, you've built up all this confidence. You've built up all this body strength. You're not starting at the beginning. You're not a complete novice. You do know you're going to be all right. You know, you can drive here. You can do this. And then even when I was looking at the classes, I was like, oh, two classes a week. I don't know. It seems like a commitment. And I was like, Tash, you've been doing two classes a week for 6 months. Like, just stick to it.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, yep, I'm going to do it. Booked into Pilates. Yep. Fine. Very nervous. Very scary. I always have to disclose my connective tissue disorder.
Yeah.
It's down loss so that people understand that I, even though they might be asking me to push my body a certain way, I can, but I shouldn't.
Yeah.
My elbows, especially, I really need to be careful not to lock them. I've been basically supporting all my weight in my locked elbow for the last year. So whenever I'm, you know, got my hands, it's all being held in that joint and not my muscles.
Yeah.
So anyway, whole bunch of things I had to do for that. Went in, I was so, the morning of Pilates, I was so nervous and I was walking around my house. I was like, oh, I really don't want to go and I'm feeling really nervous. And it's, you know, it felt like my first day of school.
Yeah.
And you know, my housemates and Annie was like, oh, you're going to be fine. You know, you've got this. And they were my little cheer squad and they're so supportive of everything I do, which is, I'm so lucky. You know, and then on the, I'm driving to Pilates and I was like, God, I feel sick. I don't think I'm going to be sick. And then I threw up in a Coles bag and in my lap on the way to Pilates. And I was like, this is like a whole new level of anxiety for like I haven't been that anxious since I was unmedicated, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh God, there's too much going on. Got there very nervous, very clammy, did the class and obviously it was great and it was, I mean, I'm not going to say it was great. It was fine. Like, it was good. It's Pilates. But then on the second time I went, I was really disappointed. We were going, doing my workout, you know, and then she goes, now think of those summer bodies.
No.
And I was like, this is my summer body. Like, no, like, that's not why I'm here. Yeah. Like, I'm here to focus on, like, my mindfulness and my body and my breathing and my strength and my endurance and me, my personal, like,
growth
and my time out. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to think about my body that I fucking hate. That's the last thing I want to think about when I'm lying down here. And then, like, you know, I was still reeling from that when she goes, think about those arms in these summer tank tops. And then obviously I thought about my arms and wanted to die.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't making me work harder. This is making me want to cry.
Yeah.
It was really upsetting. And then the class finished. And honestly, I wasn't even up from my reformer before. The music was off. The candle had been blown out. And she was already literally at the door trying to talk someone into like a full-time membership. And I was like, I'm disappointed. Like,
yeah,
you don't. Yeah, this is your business and your business is, you know, clearly fitness and that's totally fine. That's not what I want to do. So I'm a bit disappointed. So I'm going to have to find another place to trial.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I'm just going to go around and do all the like intro offers at all the different Pilates around Adelaide.
Yeah.
So hook me up with your recommendations.
Yes.
But until then, I'll just keep doing Beck's wonderful YouTube videos at home on my mat in my little room.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my Pilates update.
Yeah. I don't have an update.
No. PT update?
Going good.
Yeah.
We're about halfway through. I think next week will be the halfway mark. Should be fun.
Great.
And good.
And do you feel better in yourself? Like stronger or?
I do after the session.
Yeah.
I'm a bit shit.
Is that the endorphins? Do you
think? Yes, yeah. Definitely. I'm a bit shit because I don't go when I don't meet with my PT, which is what I need to do.
Yeah. Like to a gym?
Yes.
Oh, gyms are so scary.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So I need to find the prime time so there's like no one else there.
Yeah.
Which I think I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Late Sundays. Nights. Pretty good. Yeah. Late nights. I just got to remember to take my stuff with me to work so that I'm walking home by the time
you
get home.
You should have a spare kit at work.
Yes. I have to buy another pair of shoes. I'll think about it. the excuses?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah,
that was it there.
Yeah. But truly, I couldn't possibly keep a gym bag work. That means I need another pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Like, how hard is it to buy a $10 pair of, you know?
Give ethical fashion and shit. Yeah.
Totally. But, like, also kind of an excuse. Like, I know it's an excuse for a good reason, but they are still part of excuses we tell ourselves.
Yes.
Because you know what? And I'm just going to say this now. This is absolutely something we have to go into in another episode.
Mm.
I used being a vegetarian as an excuse for an eating disorder for years.
Ooh, okay.
And, like, masked that as an ethical choice.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I was like, oh, no, that just was an excuse, another reason for you not to be able to eat things. Like,
yeah.
But anyway, that's a whole nother story.
I did go when I was in Newcastle, though.
That's amazing.
There was a little gym at the place that we were staying, and I was like, my muscle is seizing up. I need to exercise.
Yeah.
I did, and I felt better.
Good.
So, progress.
Progress.
Woo-woo.
Oh, look at us being accountable and everything.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, it's hard work. All right, so I got a good quote for the end of this one.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so my quote for the end of the episode is a little bit of harsh truth here.
Okay.
This one's coming at you from Alex DePorteous, my very good friend and cabaret darling. Your problems are not unique. You're not the only one that doesn't want to go to the gym.
Yeah.
You're not the only one who missed the bus. Like, you're not the only one with anxiety. You're not the only one who's an alcoholic.
Yes.
You're not the only one who is poor. Like, right down to, like, you're not the only one, you know, who worries about all those tiny little things. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's important to remember that.
Yeah.
We can get too wrapped up in ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, it's important to be aware of what you're doing and how your mental health is.
Yeah.
There's no need to be a victim.
true. And it's also a thing of like, what is great about human history is that everyone has gone through what you have gone through
yeah.
and are currently going through.
Yeah.
And you can find someone who's had the same experience or some version absolutely. Of that. And you are not alone. Just and to turn that harsh truth into.
We are also not professionals.
Oh, yeah. The usual
not professionals, don't know what we're talking about. These are just our experiences.
Yeah.
Things.
Opinions. Insights. Weird life hacks. We shared any life hacks? Actually, you have a couple times.
Yeah.
Wouldn't agree with them, but sure.
Pregnancy life hacks. Like, oh, dear.
Horrible.
If you have got topics that you would like us to cover, et cetera, et cetera,
Shoot
us an email.
Justwhypod@gmail.com.
We totally love the Instagram, but both Caitlin and I manage about 5 Instagrams each.
Yes.
So we don't always have time to reply to those messages, or sometimes we don't see them, or only one of us sees them.
Yeah.
And we really love to share the love, so.
Yeah, and I think it's also a thing with the emails, you can pop in the subject line who, if it's a specific thing, being like, for Tash or for Caitlin, yeah. that could be nice as well. Then I'm reading a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like I don't have the, like I shouldn't be answering them.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have the experience too.
That's fine.
And a lot of them are addressed to you. Yeah. So you can start it with, Dear Tash. If you want to send an email to Ryan, you can.
Oh, Ryan would love fan mail. Maybe I'll write a little fan mail. Right.
Email it to justwhypod
@gmail.com. And while you're listening, like while you're doing it right now, do me a favor. Okay, if you're on Apple Podcasts, just keep scrolling. Okay, I'll let you unlock your phone. Yeah, find your phone. Yeah, unlock it. Yeah, cool. Scroll. Okay, so what you should be seeing now is ratings and review. Just hit that 5-star button. I mean, it doesn't have to be 5 stars. Be honest, whatever. But just tap it.
Yeah.
Really makes a difference. It helps our podcast be seen by other people who might be needing it. We'd love to be new and noteworthy.
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't it?
Also, whilst you're like on your phone, jump to Twitter.
Yeah. Tweet.
Follow us.
And then.
whyamilikethispod@gmail.com.
And then listen to our cool tunes.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe my brain is like, then maybe I'll tweet about Star Wars on our
Instagram.
I'll find a way.
She will find a way.
I will. Wouldn't be that hard.
Why are there any alcoholics?
A list of alcoholics in Star Wars universe. I can think of 2.
Wow.
At the top of my head. I can't remember their names right now because they're like extra characters.
Sure.
Yeah.
I swear to God, how does Star Wars come up every episode? You need to get a grip. Like, like it's every episode too. All right, can we cut this? End on the Star Wars chat.
By anything said in this episode, please contact Lifeline at 13 11 14 or www.lifeline.org.au. Why Am I Like This is a Wickedly Good production produced by Caitlin Ellen Moore and hosted by Tash. The audio for this podcast was recorded and edited by Ryan Martin John. The Why Am I Like This jingle was created by Annie Siegman and Ryan Martin John. Why Am I Like This was recorded and produced on Kaurna lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Thanks for listening.